Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast number 205. All three of us are here, but I believe this will be another mini-sode, because as we record this, it is dark outside, and we are waiting for our...
The end times are near.
And the end times are near.
No, wait.
That's a different podcast.
Superman is coming.
Yes, Superman is coming. He's coming, and he's bringing his trunks with him.
Yes.
So, Action Comics 1000 midnight release is going on tonight. As you listen to this, it has already happened, and was a huge success, I'm going to say.
Yep. I'm going to say we sold out,
sold out.
Sort of expected, but even as you listen to this, there's probably UPS pulling up and dropping off the additional ones that we ordered.
We have a bunch more coming today, and there's a bunch more coming next week.
Yep. So we should be able to accommodate stuff. It's just that you might have to catch your breath for a few hours, or possibly as long as a week.
But since this is the future they're listening to, let's go ahead and recap what happened in the midnight release, which has not, to be clear, happened yet. There was a fist fight over the last copy, which I thought was interesting.
Right. But it sort of broke up when that herd of kittens came running through,
and
everybody was just like, oh my god.
Yeah, and then it started again when there was one less kitten than everybody needed. And then the fight for the last kitten.
I can't believe they threw the kittens around like bricks.
It did seem weird. Yeah, the kitten juggling was probably the strangest part of the midnight
release. Furry bricks.
Yeah. Anyway, so you missed that.
By the way, if you've never seen the scene in the movie The Jerk, the Steve Martin movie The Jerk, with where he finds out about the horrible practice of cat juggling, highly suggest you just type in cat juggling and in YouTube and watch this scene. It's awesome.
I agree. So last week was Nick's birthday. We were recording the day before Nick's birthday.
Yes.
And then the podcast went live on Nick's birthday.
Right.
This week it's the bizarre version of that. We're recording on my birthday.
Yes.
And tomorrow when you see me, it will be too late to tell me happy birthday unless you're saying in advance for next year.
Right.
Like, people can't believe it.
No, they can't do that.
No, you can't. You're not allowed.
Then they would shame his family.
That's right.
And they would have to duel.
Yeah, yeah. They can't say happy 47th birthday. They have to say happy 47th and a day birthday.
So specific.
Very specific. Happy birthday 47 plus one.
Yes. Yes, exactly. If you say late birthday, you have to add in how many days late you
it's
are.
It's B-day 47 plus one.
Yes.
That's our sort of future speak version of it.
Yes. So anyway, we're doing what I love for my birthday, which is staying for a midnight release for DC Comics. All right, so store news. Reminder that DC D&D Adventurers League is every Tuesday and Thursday. We have two DMs on Tuesday.
Yes.
3 to 4 on Thursdays.
Even as we record this, they're finishing up their game.
Right. Now, of course, as they listen, that's over. We don't know how it's going to end.
Right.
But
probably they're dead.
Yeah, they're all dead. Everyone is dead.
The one thing I know about Dungeons & Dragons is if you die in the game...
You die in real life.
You die in real life.
Yeah, that's true. So Beholder killed everyone at the store.
Yes.
It's very strange.
The Beholder.
You probably have read about it on the news right by now.
Yeah, they're right. There's been interdimensional threats that are now loose.
It's all over Facebook.
This giant sphere with eyes.
Yep. Yeah. So if you haven't read about that, look behind you. There's a Beholder. And then Sunday we have the Magic the Gathering Dominaria pre-release.
Sunday?
That is this Sunday.
Goodness gracious!
I know it. Which this week also, you can still pre-order a box of boosters.
People have been pre-ordering the hell out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're gonna probably sell out of our boxes early.
I have to say that was a smart initiative on the part of Wizards of the Coast.
Even smarter if they'd let us know a little ahead of time.
Yep. We would have ordered more. We would have had more.
Yeah.
There'd be no danger of running out. As it is, there has never before been that danger, and I don't think it'll happen this time either, but it's a little close.
Yeah. And then Saturday, April 28th, which is, I think, a week from this Saturday, is International Tabletop Day.
Right.
A variety of games. I know we've got a few promos, like we've got a Star Realms promo. We're going
to
have...
That is to say, play promo cards
promo
and stuff
cards.
Like that, yeah.
The Steve Jackson people are coming out to run a Munchkin CCG demo. If I know the Steve Jackson people, I'm pretty sure there'll be some cool promo stuff from that.
Yep.
And we'll also just have a lot of fun games. I don't know what all we're playing. It's on the website. Go check it out.
Munchkin is pretty clever with their promos in the sense that every bookmark, t-shirt, whatever they give away has a game use.
True.
Which is pretty cool. I have to admit.
The week after that... is Saturday, May 5th. That is Free Comic Book Day. So we are like 3 weeks out from Free Comic Book Day. A little less, 2.5.
Oh my god. Yeah. There's too many things.
Too
many things. I quit.
And then of course,
I'm doing it live on the air.
There's more stuff coming up in June too, but we'll get to that later. But
Free Comic Day is gonna be cool.
Yeah, we got all our comics. They're packed up and ready to go. We have not a chance.
Yes.
Nick has read through some of them.
Yeah, I've read through a few of them.
And they're glistening with quality.
They're glistening with quality.
I know that's
what he said.
Actually, I do remember Nick saying that he's really dug some of the stuff he's read. So we'll when are we going to report in on that and sort of do our picks next week,
next week after? Next week, the week after, before Free Comic Day hits.
Yep.
But yeah, we're going to go through a bunch
Let you know what to read and what to destroy on the site.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the Overwatch comic myself. So, all right. News-wise, there's only a couple things we want to hit this week. First of all, there's the weird news. Actually, they're both weird news.
Yeah, they're both weird news.
So Tim Seeley is working on a 6-issue miniseries, Injustice versus the Masters of the Universe.
It is Injustice, like the video game where Superman and Batman and all those DC characters fight.
Yep.
In a kind of dark future.
Yep.
Which is a good, very good game. Has
a
surprisingly strong storyline for something that made me my blood kind of churn when I heard about it.
Yeah, I thought it sounded like a bad punch 'em up.
But yep. Thanks, Tom Taylor.
Yeah,
but and also to the original game guys because they didn't. That was not Tom Taylor was not on board for the game.
Yeah,
but
was he not?
The original game was not by Tom Taylor.
No, okay. Yep.
And he did not even. I thought he had a more involvement in the second one, but even there, I think he was.
He was mostly the comic.
He was doing
the
comics.
Yeah, the game developers.
But the comic legitimately is like was great.
Yeah,
has been great under Tom Taylor. Now. Taking that comic, putting it in somebody else's hands. It's Tim Seeley, who we like, though, from Hack Slash and what's the horror one?
Revival.
Revival
and other stuff. Running that headlong into Masters of the Universe.
That's weird.
Is a little weird. He-Man, strange. I remember when we've had Tim out before, he spoke of like wanting to write Masters of the Universe, though. It's kind of one of his kid projects that he had some ideas to work with.
Wait, when did we have Tim out?
It wasn't. We did an interview with him as Comic Pants.
Oh, man. Was it that far back?
It was.
That far back.
Did we just do an email interview?
It was an email interview,
okay.
Yeah.
And he dropped a few ideas in there, and I was like, oh, this guy has some thoughts on it. So I, you know, for something as weird as that is, I would say this actually has some potential.
Yeah.
Now, is this like...
And of course, you know, like Tim... also, people may remember he like had a really strong run on Grayson.
He's doing Green Lantern now.
Grayson, which was was co-written by a guy. I was like, oh, this guy, after Tim goes away, he's going to become nothing, probably. His name was Tom King.
Yeah.
And he's now writing half the DC Universe.
Yeah, and marrying Batman and Catwoman.
Yes. So he's done all right for himself.
Not in the sense of that he's in a three-way relationship with Batman and Catwoman, I want to be clear.
He's marrying them, I pictured him like in priestly robes
the
ceremonies.
He is neither part of their coupling or officiating the ceremony. He is just writing the book.
He's chronicling a fictional story about it.
He's chronicling a fictional story
so
about once they marry.
I didn't look at the solicit with the Injustice and He-Man.
Yeah.
Is it like... traditional He-Man, or do they say? Or is it sort of like
we don't know
a dark
about.
Rendering sort of Injustice-style
we
He-Man?
Don't know
well, you know, so I'm going to say, here's what I would do if I were writing this bizarre concept. But I would go with, you know, you don't want... He-Man can't be quite as campy as the show was.
No.
But nor would I want it too dark. It seems like the guys writing the Power Rangers comic, by all accounts, are finding a good medium point.
Yeah.
Like, it's not too realistic, but it's got a little bit more edge than the show did. I've heard. But anyway...
I think they're doing their big, dark Days of Future Past stuff right now.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you know, it's dramatic. But I don't think it's, like, grim and gritty. Super grim and gritty. I would have He-Man sort of seeing what's gone on here and how this is, like, torn up this world or whatever and trying to avoid that. He's like, we can't let this happen to Eternia or whatever. I think you juxtapose somewhat the relative innocence of... Masters of the Universe versus the darkness of Injustice.
So, just to see. Okay, so the Freddie Williams, who did the Batman TMNT.
He's becoming the go-to guy for mashups.
So, believing He-Man and the Masters of Eternity of the Universe defeated, a robotic imposter has seized control of Eternia, but not for long. After freeing his kingdom from his strongman's rule, He-Man learns not everyone is pleased to see the pretender deposed, but Adam knows the value of freedom. When heroes from another dimension ask his aid in deposing a superhero-turned-dictator, he agrees. Teaming up with Batman against the Superman of the Injustice Universe, He-Man and his new allies face dangerous and familiar enemies in a battle where no world is safe.
Well, it's not quite what I guessed. It's definitely out there.
So, He-Man and presumably Orko and, I don't remember who that's not Teela, is it? It's, the woman, is it Teela?
Yeah.
And Battle Cat are all going to help Batman and Harley Quinn take down Superman.
But where's Man-at-Arms?
Which is not, and presumably Manny Face is in there somewhere.
What about Stinkor?
Not a sentence I ever thought I'd hear spoken.
This feels more like the Justice League Power Rangers crossover
which
in some
great.
Regards.
Yeah, also
it was.
Tom Taylor.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm curious to see what Tim said.
I would say, if you had said pitched me this like 10 years ago, but say, you know, before even Injustice was like a known thing and said, yeah. we're going to do a crossover with He-Man and some dark DC future superheroes,
yeah.
I would have said, well, good luck with that giant stinker.
Yeah.
But now it actually has a chance.
Yep.
It could still stink.
Yes.
Actually, I think with Tim Seeley writing, it won't stink.
It would
be solid at the very
end. A giant stinkor.
Yes.
Star Stinkor and not Stink.
So, what if Stinkor teamed with Joker and he stunk it up with Joker Venom?
He'd be the Joker.
Oh, man.
So, also weird news. Steven Spielberg, off the heels of Ready Player One, is going to be doing Black Hawk, about a series of squadron of World War II era pilots.
I mean, that sounds right up his alley.
Yeah.
But... what I'm guessing based on this, and I haven't read anything other than basically headlines on this, is that Spielberg probably... we know he has a fascination with World War II. He's told many stories about it.
Yeah, Band of Brothers. He's teamed up with Tom Hanks.
Right. Plus, he's done the super serious shit in...
Saving Private Ryan. So
what's the... Schindler's List.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's as hardcore as it gets. But I think the adventurous side of him, which I remember even back on... Did you ever see Steven Spielberg's Amazing Stories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The very first episode was about, like, a team of bombers in, like, one of those flying fortresses.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And I bet he grew up with Black Hawk comics. That was like a 50s, 60s thing for DC. You know, some people, you know, came in on Sergeant Rock and other stuff like that. I think his was probably Black Hawks. And he's probably looking to do a more adventurous Tintin. We know he loves Tintin, too. A Tintin-esque kind of, like, adventurous pilot
Everything you're saying right now makes me excited for the possibilities that this has.
Let me throw some cold water on that.
Oh, okay.
Frequent Spielberg collaborator David Koepp will be writing it. He was the screenwriter for Jurassic Park, which is good. The Lost World, less good. War of the Worlds, meh. And Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That last one is sad, but all the other ones at least were fun.
And Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that might not be the screenwriter's fault. That might have been Lucas.
Yeah. I also have a feeling there were a lot of screenwriters involved in that one.
Yeah.
Trying to make it, to push it in various directions. So,
That's not terrible.
Nick, did you see Ready Player One?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like it
last week?
I know. Well, remind me. You generally liked it?
I did. I mean, it was a good popcorn flick.
Right. I feel like this could be up Spielberg's alley.
I think so.
It could be like have some of that qualities of like the Captain America movie, you know, a World War II, which you got to be a little careful with. You don't want to make it just all fun and games. But it doesn't necessarily have to. Also, the Blackhawks don't necessarily have to be operating in World War II.
I bet they will.
But because they have been shown in like just about every era since.
So my knowledge of Blackhawks
could
is
just
actually
be like,
pretty minimal. Beyond
it's a team of international pilots. Blackhawk was Polish. And they're sort of an elite squadron that shoots down Nazis.
I just didn't know if there were like main characters of the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Is there,
so Black Hawk himself
was the main guy.
Something is
I forget.
He's the main guy.
Okay.
And there's all it's very Howling Commandos-esque. They're all memorable sort of stereotypes, which presumably we fleshed out a little bit more.
Like Gail Simone had Lady Blackhawk.
Yeah.
In
Lady
Birds
Black
of Prey
was a thing.
Yeah. And they've used that on Justice League Unlimited and things like that. But I never was really like. I knew of their existence, but I never knew much about them.
And then one of their members became like a courier in the modern day. I remember Hawkworld used him pretty effectively as a freelance courier. I think this is really interesting and potentially could be fun. What I think is really interesting is DC is almost going back to the well that Marvel did, and that when they first started, Marvel had Iron Man, which bigger than the Blackhawks, admittedly. But most people don't know who Iron Man was when he came to the theaters.
Yeah, right.
People don't know who the Blackhawks are. So I think that in doing something like this, and then also having like the director whose name I'm blanking on do Fourth World, Ana DuVernay.
Yeah,
they are sort of going to their more obscure and sort of almost relaunching their universe with disconnected properties. They can be like, hey, here's a cool corner of the DC universe.
So
if their
it's
next
time
movie,
for that Sergeant Rock movie,
it may be time for that Booster Gold movie.
Well, so if you really wanted to flesh out sort of the DC universe in a Blackhawks film, you could have Sergeant Rock.
You could do Sergeant Rock,
but you.
If there's not a Sergeant Rock cameo, I'll be very disappointed.
But you could also do Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
She could be in there as well. And
it'll be a little weird.
It might be a little weird, but, you know.
I don't know. I'm excited about the podcast. As you guys know, I have a bit of a beef with the DC Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
I might have mentioned a couple times. But I always want it to be good, and I feel like this makes me, like, Spielberg doing a Black Hawk movie feels more like what I kind of want them to be doing, which is go a little weird with it. Have a little fun with it.
Actually, you know what? The entire time that I've thought about the movie, since we were talking about it earlier today, in my head at least, I never once assumed it would be part of the DC Universe. I always thought it would be an adventure movie about a bunch of World War II adventurers.
That's what I think too, but I think they could use that to springboard a new DC Universe. You can do the right. Justice Society afterwards. You can,
yeah.
if you basically set their DC Cinematic Universe in the World War II era,
yeah.
and then move forward from there like DC did back in the day, that is essentially a reboot without a reboot.
Well, so the reason I don't think that'll happen is I believe Spielberg has spoken somewhat disparagingly about superhero movies. He kind of doesn't like their dominance and all that, and sort of. And I don't think he like wants to be part of a universe building for
but
that.
But it's not up to him.
Well, I don't think he would take the job as director, because he can pretty much call the shots on anything he wants for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
I don't think he would have taken this job if he was like, if they're like, well, you need to go and lay some seeds, and you need to have Wonder Woman in there, and you need to have Darkseid.
But I don't even think they need to do all that. I'm just thinking if someone else directs a post-credits stinger that they put on there, where they introduce, or they say, hey, can you throw in a nod to Sergeant Rock? I could see him doing that.
But what if they came up to Spielberg and was like, so you don't like superhero comics and things or movies like that, but what if you spearheaded and kind of had your way to do them?
I think they do what they did with Iron Man, which is it was never intended to be part of a cinematic universe. It was, they threw in a fun Easter egg at the end that was a nod to the fans.
That's all
I think this should be.
My craziest notion that this is not going to happen would be a trio or so of only slightly related wartime movies.
Yeah.
And they would do Black Hawks in one, and you'd find out, but they would be hinting at like the island that time forgot and stuff like
amazing.
That. And so you do like the Losers or Suicide Squad and another, possibly team up with them. Like that's the original Suicide Squad that was just a military unit.
Or G.I. Commando.
G.I. Commando, Creature Commanders is what he was.
What was the robot called? G.I. Robot.
G.I. Robot. And then the other is like Sergeant Rock.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you have like some of those larger-than-life elements that you would expect in a kind of rocketeer-ish type world, which is like...
That's what I'm imagining.
You know, I would love to, or that they, you know, gave you glimpses of in like the Cap movie, like, you know, but I would like... You know, a giant robot on the, you know, Nazi bot or the war wheel or something like that. All of that, Island That Time Forgot, trying to weaponize dinosaurs, stuff.
I can see all that being up Spielberg's alley.
Yeah.
I think that is the DC universe I want to see. They're wacky, they're weird stuff.
Yep.
The stuff that Darwin Cook did so good with.
Yeah, honestly.
And then you can go from there to challenge the unknown.
Oh, man, yeah. That would fit so well in a 60s period piece.
And
that would be a post.
And that's the thing, A, that Marvel has not done, really. They've done a little bit of period piece, but not really.
Right, kind of in the Adventurers era.
Yeah. And B, the DC's already proven is like the one thing they've gotten right was a period piece superhero movie. The World War I superhero movie Marvel did one. They did Cap.
Yeah.
But then they immediately moved to the modern era.
Right.
If they like decided to do their superhero universe as a period piece thing and did the 60s stuff that everybody said Fantastic Four should be or that kind of thing, it could set them apart in a way.
You know what I would do if I were doing that? And there's no way they're going to do this,
No,
this is all not going to happen.
No, Justice League 2 is going to happen. It's going to be
terrible. Spielberg is going to basically make a movie about adventurer pilots. And
if it ever gets made.
If they were doing this and they were kind of, they did the 40s and then you had like the more adventurers in like the 50s and 60s, I would have in the 60s the first superheroes be like weird dudes like the Doom Patrol and stuff like that. I would go ahead and play with the kind of the weird DC Universe stuff that people don't know.
I would do Justice Society.
Justice Society makes great sense as a World War II spinoff, but I don't know. The thing is, none of this is going to happen. They're going to make Justice League 2 and it's going to be terrible. But
Randy, you're the most jaundiced person I can imagine on this.
Prove me wrong, and I will happily be wrong. But DC has not proven me wrong yet. All right, let's move on to comics for the week. We were talking about comics the week of April 18th, or if you're here for the minute release, April 17th, although it's still technically the 18th. And also, minute release already happened. And the weirdest thing, I think, besides the fight and the kitten fight that happened, was the drag race that happened between the people who brought in their like bicycles and rode them through the store for like an hour. That was weird.
I actually invited those guys.
Oh.
I just forgot to tell you.
Who invited the guy on the Segway? I don't
I thought it was strange that they were in cosplay. I thought that was an interesting change. And it's not a thing. I'd heard of the 501st, but I had not heard of this particular gang that dressed up in DC Hero cosplay and rode bicycles in stores.
I knew you wouldn't go for a DC thing in there because you're a big baby about DC.
It's true.
So I was just, yes, DC bicyclists, cosplayers, come on in.
Right. Well, it's better to ask for forgiveness and permission.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, so...
But now that that's happened,
now that's
it's behind us.
Yeah. Let's talk about comics for the week. My pick this week is sort of a familiar one, except it's also a new one. Black Hammer Age of Doom number one. This is the return of the Black Hammer series, which had been on a hiatus while they did two miniseries. A first one that roped Dan Dave into it, which was called...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Dr. Frankenstein? Or no, Sherlock Frankenstein.
Sherlock Frankenstein, the Legion of Evil.
Yep.
And then they're doing one now called Dr. Star and the Kingdom of Tomorrow?
Yeah, like and for, like, I think anybody listening probably has heard us talk about this, but for those who don't know, it's kind of a shared superhero universe, or not, well, a superhero universe that Jeff Lemire has been building up.
So a thing happened
at Dark Horse Comics.
And I'm not going to spoil it because Dave is not quite caught up. But a thing happened at the, I think at the end of Sherlock Frankenstein, it might have been at the end of Black Hammer Volume 1. That leads immediately into Black Hammer Volume 2 here.
It was Black Hammer Volume 2.
Was it Volume 2?
This is the second,
volume of the series.
Yes.
There's the second trade paperback,
yes.
And this is considered Volume 2 of the single issues.
Correct. So this was Volume 2 of the trades.
Right.
Black Hammer number 14.
Yeah, I think I accidentally read about it when I was making the sign for this, but again, I don't mind too much.
Anyway.
But it had something to do with they had been trapped in this small town for like a decade.
And suddenly it looks like maybe this new character knows...
Yep.
And is immediately removed from the board so that she can't tell them.
Yep.
And where she goes is very interesting and has some great creepy art. Just there's this two-page spread of sort of creepy villain-looking things.
Yeah, those are awesome-looking.
It's really great.
Is it still...
That's the same artist, right?
Yes, it is Dean Ormston doing the art. He's great.
He was killing it.
He did stuff on Lucifer, which was a book Nick and I both really liked. And then there's a lot of stuff as the heroes react to this brief moment of they thought they were going to find everything out and then they don't. And so they discuss all of that. It's really, really good. It's got a nice new mystery to it. I love the new character.
I assume that like Lemire's other issues in there, that it's like a mixture of kind of deeper characterizations and like a sort of character, you know, superheroes who sort of talk about difficult issues and stuff that they're dealing with. But also there's like big, larger-than-life Marvel DC kind of stuff in it, too.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely some nods here toward DC and Marvel stuff. And there's also... It's an original superhero universe. So it is basically someone playing with all the toys without actually using the toys.
I want the original art of that double-page splash of all those villains.
I bet that's super cheap.
I'm sure.
I'm sure that's super cheap. it's fantastic. It won the Eisner Award for Best New Series. It won the award for Dave's Heart.
Yes.
and I think we all like it. Nick, have you caught up?
I've only read the first volume.
So,
I know of the second volume. Yeah. So I know a few things that happen.
I am caught up on everything except Dr. Star number 2, which I'll get caught up on. This is one of my favorite series, and I'm super happy to see it back.
I really love the Scotty Young cover this week.
Oh, that's...
I love his versions of all the different characters.
Dave, what is your pick this week?
You know, I'm just jumping back to Black Hammer for just a second. I've also been pleased that, you know, the series that is kind of an oddball one, it's like, there's not a lot of superhero comics that launch with the heroes having been trapped for 10 years, hiding out on a farm, trying to make the best life they could in a small town.
Just Christ on Infinite Earths, as I remember.
And becoming sort of a dysfunctional family along the way.
Right.
Jeff Lemire said, he kind of wanted to include all the things that fascinate him or that he likes to write about in there, and those are all things.
Right.
He's interested in characters, he's interested in small towns, he's interested in dysfunctional families, and he loves superheroes, and I'm like, he found a way to put all of that stuff together in a really interesting way, and it paid off big time. He won an Eisner for it.
Yep.
Was it Best New Series or something like that? Lots of people have been picking up. I honestly don't know anybody who we've recommended it to who's like come back and said, yeah, it wasn't for me. They've always been like, where's the next volume?
Who says that, I killed them.
Oh, well, that's good. Luckily, you haven't had to kill anybody because nobody says that.
That's
exactly right.
The cops ask, that's what you tell them.
I really like that he uses archetypes from, you know, comics that you know of, but he doesn't use, like, the classic. Like, there's not a Superman, but there is, like, an Adam Strange kind of, like.
Yeah,
and
right.
then he uses kind of the off-the-beaten path
There's nods. There's a Martian Manhunter type, but even he is not
doing it. Yeah, right. Is he called, like, the Warlord of Mars or whatever? Or something like
Barbalian,
that?
Barbalian, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, that's right. So I felt like he was throwing a little bit of John Carter Warlord of Mars.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
In there as well, but they're interesting rethinks, and like Nick said, it's not all just, it's not like there's an obvious Spider-Man, Superman, Cap ones.
Right.
They do you will recognize the heroes they're derived from.
They're archetypes more than they are riffs. Yeah.
But they're super interesting rethinks. Yeah.
Anyway, everyone should read this book.
Am I up next?
You're up next.
All right, I'm gonna mention the very book that we sold last night at the Kitten Bicycle Fest.
Yep.
which is Action Comics number 1,000.
1,000!
That's right. This is a big, crazy 80-page giant, which is an old comic tradition, the 80-pagers. And it's to the best of my knowledge, certainly it's the first, I think, major American comic to ever hit 1,000 issues.
Yeah, we were trying, I can't think of anything else.
Yeah.
Detective's got about 30 issues and it's going to hit that too.
Yeah, but and they were the two kind of originators of all things superhero, at least as we think of them. Yep. There was only pulp stuff before that. And so this is a story where this is a kind of an anthology that has famous people who've written Superman, people who will be writing Superman or have written it recently or in the far past. And it concludes with a story from Brian Bendis, who DC has made big hullabaloo about him taking over, much the way John Byrne did back in 1986 when the Superman, the post-crisis Superman, who was around until... Well, all the way until New 52, mm-hmm. and even then he came back eventually.
Yep.
He's basically the entire Superman of the modern era was created by John Byrne at a time when he was writing Superman and Action Comics, and it spun out of a miniseries called Man of Steel. Brian Bendis is also doing all of those things. He's doing a miniseries called Man of Steel. He will be writing Action Comics. He'll be writing Superman. So this series, in some ways, it's kind of, this is a wide variety of stories with a lot of good art and some pinups in between. Some of them are tributes to favorite eras of Superman. There's kind of an interesting one where he's living different lives or seeing through Vandal Savage does this weird sort of time warp type thing with him. And he kind of sees all these alternate versions of him, and they're actually just the versions of him that existed in, like, the 1930s when he was, like, more of a social crusader, the 40s when he was in the war, mm-hmm. but it was kind of like an adventurous style and not, like, the kind of grim realities. But they do touch a little bit in these flashes of them on, like, you know, how it appeared. They all reflect the way the comics were and not necessarily real life. And there's some neat ideas in it. Let's see.
There's some really good ones in there. I mean, the Tom King one I've really enjoyed.
Yep. And there's one that has a rather large notion of I can't remember if it's King or Snyder who does the one that's like takes place on the eve of like was it like the sun, you know, consuming the earth or whatever.
Yeah, that was Tom King.
Yeah, Tom King did that one.
Snyder.
Jeff Johns and Richard Donner do a story that's of all things it's kind of interestingly about the guy who was. The dude in the car that Superman is smashing on the cover of Action Comics number one, it number one?
It was.
I couldn't remember if it was like number something else, but back in the day, and it's actually an interesting little story.
Snyder does a Luther story.
Yeah. Paul Dini, who in the animated series had created a sidekick for Mr. Mix's Piddalick, that was his kind of who voiced her?
Oh man, I don't remember.
It was that
the
comedian
voice.
Chick.
Roseanne Barr.
No. she used to. I remember she used to show up on talk shows and pal around with Madonna, Sandra Bernhard.
Oh yeah,
I believe
that.
She voiced the sidekick of Mr. Mix's Piddalick, and she returns in this in a story that has Mix's Piddalick, and is drawn by Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, one of the great DC artists.
A classic. In fact, he was retired?
I think so, but he came out, he's like doing this, and he's going to do some stuff with Bendis, too. Let's see, John Cassaday draws a story in here. There's a cool pinup from Walt Simonson that I liked. It was actually
that one's great.
It's interesting because I remember him doing a pinup in like Superman, I don't remember what issue it was. I almost feel like it was only like some 400th issue or something. Action may have jumped ahead a lot when it was bi-weekly or weekly for a while. But he did kind of a brighter one, and this is kind of a dark image of Superman, but it's cool looking.
You know, it's dark, but and it's like his entire face is like covered in shadow, but it looks like he's smiling.
Well, it's more like I feel like he's determined looking in there, but he's not like grim, gritty. But the reason probably, I mean, I think in some ways the biggest reason to read this is to get your first glimpse of what the direction of Superman is going to be. And there's some, so this Bendis, he's going to shake things up. We know that, you know, people remember when he came on and made the Avengers a big mega franchise. He did a bunch of stuff that, well, some ways we haven't forgiven him for and never will.
Some ways being my ways.
Yeah. And I did not like that either, you know, but that was when he decided that the Avengers should be more like the Justice League and have all their biggest heroes, which would include Wolverine and Spider-Man, even though they don't really fit necessarily as Avengers.
No, they don't fit in the Avengers. They shouldn't be in the Avengers.
All right.
Spider-Man is...
Sorry.
All right. We're trying to be positive here.
I didn't know what you were saying. I just kind of triggered on those words.
Yeah,
sorry.
Sure. Anyway, point is, Bendis shakes stuff up, and he does it on any series he's going to take over. He shook things up when he came in on Daredevil, and he outed Daredevil's identity eventually. And that was a storyline that actually ended up working in a lot of ways. So I'm trying to approach this with an open mind. He does do something in this that's pretty big, if it is what it looks like, and it might be or it might not. But something pretty big happens in it. But all
that Superman's revealed to be a dog.
All that you'll or what you'll see a lot of in this is that Superman is in. It sort of begins in media res, and he's fighting somebody and is taking some serious punishment. You'll also see Supergirl in this, and
by the way, just a side note, we always criticize Bendis for not being great at action. Mm-hmm. How's his action here?
I actually thought it was solid.
It is Action Comics, so
yeah. You know, they've always called it that, but you know, that's about as key as detective is to Detective Comics. Sure. He's not always a big detective.
But if you're a guy known for like not being great at action, you're coming in to do Action Comics.
Yeah.
The best way to get around the easy jokes people saying, you know, making fun of that, is right. to open by doing a big action sequence.
It's true, and I suspect that was on his mind, was to kind of have it not be a talking heads issue.
Yeah, which is what everybody was expecting.
That is to say, some of the more memorable conversations are a waitress and like I think maybe just a patron at like a restaurant that he crashes through. It looked like they were having a conversation and he's unconscious for a minute or two, and they kind of try and drag him to safety. They're not sure what's happening, and they kind of banter a little bit in the traditional Bendis style. Now, it is actually kind of interesting and funny, and but along the way we get a little sense of what this bad guy is all about, and
like
Superman
actually uses Supergirl as well.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. And I will say, in the tradition of the Bendis being able to pull together a cool moment when he's fighting this dude, Superman actually says something I thought was super cool, which I'm not going to say here, but it was an awesome little scene that shows he's, even though he's taking some punishment in this, he's not about to, like, stand down. This is not some sort of, there's not some wuss Superman who gives up, who has to go back and rethink things in the Fortress of Solitude. He's pretty determined and tough. And notably, by the way, Superman, as some of this is happening, is very much, it seems like, making an effort to minimize casualties or anything like that.
Yeah.
Or prevent them completely, I guess I should say, as he's taking this pounding. And notably, there's a scene where he gets, like, chunked, and he is, like, flying at, like, you know, movie speeds, I assume, towards a bookstore. And he stops right in front, like, inches before the window that somebody is standing in front of.
I actually thought that was a really cool scene.
Yeah, and, like, you see his like, hands just real lightly touch the window.
Have we mentioned that this was drawn by Jim Lee?
Yep, pretty notable. So, and you know, as everybody kind of knows, the red trunks are back. It is brought up in the story. It's a little bit meta. It's a little one of those things where if you hate Bendis, you're going to be like, oh, geez. but I actually kind of like the way it was used was kind of interesting.
It's
and it
not
comes
unlike
up,
sort of the Geoff Johns Aquaman, do you talk to fish
right,
kind of thing.
Right. They went a little bit meta with it. I think it was sort of like, this is the elephant in the room, so let's address it.
Yeah.
Anyway, and beyond that, there is the sort of the mystery of what is to come. What is the deal with this guy? Is what he claims true? And where do we, you know, where will we go from here? But I thought it was an interesting start. Here's the thing. Even when Bendis rubs me the wrong way, I usually find something interesting that he has to say. His X-Men stuff was very not for me, but I would occasionally read an issue, like the issue where Iceman came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wow, that was really well written. He did a good job with this. Or even I'd read an issue where I was like, phew, I would not have done that. That's weird. That seems against character. But what an interesting conversation, or that was an interesting idea. And in this, you know, this is really just like probably a 10-page story or something like that. So there's not a lot to go on. But there's enough interest for me to want to, as a Superman fan, to want to know what happens next. Yeah. Which is a pretty good tip-off to the start of the whole thing. Nick, what do you got?
So, sometimes Randy has a Tom Taylor Tuesday. Yes. I'm having a Tom King Tuesday.
yes, you are. That's right.
Because both of his books hit.
We have to call it Tuesday.
just you go with the first letter.
You might want to rethink that one. Go back to the drawing board. But Batman...
It's your day, Nick. You invented it.
But Batman number 40 hits...
45.
It is 45.
Right, because 44 was...
And this is the start of a new story arc that... And this is Tom King's... it's called The Gift... And it is sort of his play on the Alan Moore, Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow story.
Oh, interesting.
He's not going to give the Black Mercy to Catwoman to make her think she's married, is he?
It's not, because it involves time travel and it involves Booster Gold. And
okay. He is definitely embracing the bigness of the DC Universe, as is everybody at DC right now, after Dark Knight's Metal and all that.
I kind of like that, honestly.
I will say, it is very dark at times. Almost.
That's kind of King's thing.
It skews a little darker than I was expecting because...
How many animals die?
No animals die.
Okay.
A Green Lantern dies.
Oh, okay. Is it not Chip?
It's not Chip.
To be fair, Green Lanterns do tend to die.
They do.
But basically, I'm not going to reveal
how
it goes. But yeah, this is Booster Gold trying to give Batman a gift. He thinks it's a good thing. Maybe not such a good thing. And...
I got the gun that killed your parents. It's in a museum in the future, and now it's yours.
But I feel like Tom King writes a heck of a skeets, and his Booster Gold is sort of narcissistic and funny and about what I expect Booster to be.
Interesting.
Tony Daniel does the art, which I wasn't 100% sure of, but he does a really good job.
He has not been generally getting in on this before, right, Tony Daniel? Is this his first?
He's thrown in on a couple of issues, but... so yeah, this is sort of an alternate timeline history thing, and it is kind of Tom King getting to have a little bit of crazy fun.
That does not sound like typical, I mean, I guess he's being defined by not doing what people expect. Certainly Mr. Miracle is not a standard fourth world big and boisterous adventure title, but even so, this seems a little unusual even for him to...
But it's interesting, that's kind of cool, I like.
But like the world is like full of like the Joker's gang, sort of like Batman Beyond-ish style.
So this is an alternate future?
Alternate timeline.
Okay.
Like Jason Todd is like selling anti-theft car devices, like infomercial style. It's just kind of humorous and fun and a little bit on the dark side, but that's Tom King.
That's humorous. That's fun.
My other Tom King pick is Mr. Miracle number 8, which we're, you know, into the second half of this. A few more issues
only
left.
Only four more left.
This whole issue is sort of about how you juggle... a newborn baby, and that
don't
sort
juggle
of,
newborn babies.
Yes. Well, if you're Mr. Miracle, you
that's
might as
fair.
Well.
I believe he meant metaphorically, Randy.
I did mean metaphorically. Oh, how do you juggle raising a kid and being the High Father who is fighting a war against Darkseid?
Don't juggle High Father. He's very heavy.
No, Mr. Miracle is High Father.
Oh.
Because Orion is dead and High Father is dead.
I'm looking at this picture, and it looks like somebody beat the hell out of him.
Yeah, Scott Free has some... He gets beaten to hell in this issue by multiple times. He's not unlike the person in a noir story just getting the crap kicked out of him.
I feel like if you get the position of High Father, the Zeus of the new gods, you shouldn't get to have to be the guy in the noir story.
But he's frontline fighter. He wants to be there. He trades off days with Big Barda. She leads on some days so he can be with the kid and vice versa.
Fair enough.
It's interesting.
Does he grow a big beard?
He has a beard.
He has a beard. Good. He has kind of a bit.
You can't be High Father without a beard.
So that's interesting. He is. It sounds like Tom King is. I've caught the vibe that he uses the DC kind of craziness as a to sell his metaphor at times. And so what you've got is a story about a couple trying to juggle their husband-wife responsibilities to the kid. It's just that in this case, it's not with just a job or whatever. It's with running the new gods.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they're also, I love that the art by, why am I blanking of
Mitch
it?
Gross.
Mitch Guards. I love that he gives Scott Free, in this issue alone, like 6 different superhero t-shirts that he's wearing. He's like wearing, there's a Watchmen reference, which is weird, but,
Meta.
Superman, there's a Nightwing, there's Aquaman.
That's fun.
It's just kind of fun little thing. There's a Booster Gold fan club t-shirt, which we actually used to have that shirt
yes,
in the store. But honestly, I like Tom King's approach to this. I don't quite know what to expect from it every single time, and I like that. I like not knowing.
Yeah, sure. But those both sound fun.
But there is sort of the ever presence of, is this actually happening? Is this sort of, he's stuck in a trap by Darkseid and he's trying to escape?
You know, it's interesting, by the way, that's, in a very different way, that is why I still like Bendis sometimes, even when his tics annoy me, is because I don't quite know what to predict from his stuff.
Yep.
I mean, beyond that, you know, like, you know that Tom King will do some out-of-order timeline and a little bit of a, you know, I don't know quite what's going on here, but this will probably make sense when I reread it later, and Bendis will inevitably have some chattier scenes, some characters talking, but beyond that, plot-wise, like, I don't usually know where they're going.
And I'm not going to spoil endings in any effect, but these issues always end weirdly for me, because it always sort of, like, ends on, like, this... I expect another page, and it just, like, ends.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
That's how Warren Ellis ends his books.
Yeah, it's a little jarring at times, but it's also like, okay, I'm into it, but it's a bit strange.
Dave, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is a kind of fun new book from Image Comics called Skyward.
Yep.
It's got a woman flipping around on the cover over the city, and you're like, oh, is she flying? What's going on here? Well, you will find out, sir. Written by, I actually don't know either of these creators. Joe Henderson writes...
I don't know who Joe Henderson is. He's written some other stuff from Image, but I haven't read any of it.
Lee Garbett
did The Highwaymen with Mark Brennan and Adam Freeman back in the day. He's written some other stuff.
Which I'll said, because the artwork is a big part of why I like this.
Well, he started off as sort of a Frank Quitely clone a little bit. Yeah, not quite on that level, but he was sort of influenced by... And this is a different look.
It is a different look. I'm not even quite sure what to compare it to. It's more energetic and some sort of dynamic in some ways than Quitely. But it also reminds me, I guess, in some ways of like...
Chris Sprouse?
I was going to say Olivier Coipel in some ways, but it's even there, there's almost a little bit, just a little bit of like the manga influence as far as like, you know, when characters are kind of like moving around and fighting.
I had to look him up just to see what else he'd done. He worked for Marvel on the Loki Agent of Asgard series.
Okay. Writer or artist?
Artist. But he also did a lot of the Stephanie Brown Batgirl, which I remember.
I could see that. So what you got here when it begins is... is a family who experiences something kind of rather jarring. There's a husband and wife and their infant child when suddenly the gravity of Earth disappears.
Yeah.
That is sort of the central hook of it. And I have a feeling that although they are going to be kind of poking at it a little bit more, that it may be one of those things a little bit like... Why did all the zombies happen in a zombie movie? It's less important, perhaps, than what happens.
Maybe,
the way the world changes.
I mean, clearly, he knew what was coming, because they talk about, like, you know, it's happening. And,
yeah, he seems to know it's coming. Yeah. I'm just not sure that they're going to get into, like, a great deal of explanation about it, or it's going to be, it's like, yes, I have my experiments in quantum mechanics revealed blah, 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 and you're like, okay.
I can see by either way, actually.
Because the book seems like it's more about kind of an energetic 10 years later moment, or 20 years later, rather.
Yeah, when his infant daughter is 20.
Yeah, because what happens is, like, that... It looks like things have gone, like... When he's just in his house when this happens, and, like, his coffee cup kind of is bouncing around, and, like, the coffee is drifting up in little globules, like you see if you see him on the space shuttle.
Yep.
And when he opens the door, though, it looks like all hell has broken loose, because all the cars, all their momentum, you know, anything that's, you know, impacts anything, throws it up in the air, and there's nothing to keep it down.
Yeah, it's not no gravity. It's like, what, 10% gravity's left or something?
I thought it might actually be no gravity. When I was making the sign, I was under the impression it was light gravity, but...
It looks more like moon, like microgravity to me.
I think it's zero.
I think it's zero, because people are, like... sailing into the air and not stopping at all.
Float. You'll kind of Hulk leap on the moon and stuff like that.
Oh, everybody's not floating in the sky all the time.
No, but it's only because that they've got like tethers and stuff like that. And then several times she says, "Do you remember what the world was like with gravity? With more gravity, but with gravity."
Okay.
So their daughter grows up in this world and. She's like, it reminded me of that, what's that video game with that courier who like kind of runs around parkour style? Yeah, Mirror's Edge style. She clearly lives and loves this world and has never known anything different.
Yeah.
There's like lines and stuff stretched all across between buildings now, and little sort of balloon tethers for people to catch on to, so that, you know, if you know what you're doing, you can be like launching yourself all over the place. It's still super dangerous if you don't know what you're doing, but she knows what she's doing.
I like that there's like hijackers in the air and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's actually kind of not super hard sci-fi. It's like adventurous kind of dealings with the idea.
I don't think there's a scientific reason why gravity would stop it.
Right. At one point, she sees a little crosswalk sign that says crossing ahead, and it shows some characters holding hands and walking, you know, the little silhouette of that.
Yep.
And she's like, I wonder what this old, you know, sign means. I have no idea, because in her world, everything is much more three-dimensional. You could, if you want, you know, to go up to a building's top floor, you could kind of launch yourself from the ground up towards that. Nothing will stop you. Your momentum will keep you going as long as you grab onto something. And so that's the kind of the way the world is built now.
Yep.
And the artist does a great job of conveying it and kind of giving it enough realistic design sense that, you know, it doesn't feel like super cartoonish.
Yeah. It's a fun concept. I like it. It's fun characters. Mm-hmm. Good art.
Yeah, there's somebody she's met who's kind of, she's got an interesting crush on. The guy is, paraplegic?
Yeah.
So, and he's like, oh, yeah, the day we lost gravity is the best thing that ever happened to me. So he's no longer constrained to, like, a wheelchair or something like that. There's also an interesting sequence where you mentioned with the hijackers that has to do with sort of how the physics work in it. So there's some kind of cool adventurous scenes. And then there's a subplot building that clearly has to do with the why of it all that you were talking about, Randy. Yep. And where things might go next in the world. But it's told primarily through the perspective of the daughter who's enjoying it and is about to find out, I think, more about, like, why it's happening. But anyway, yes, Skyward is the book, and I definitely recommend giving the first issue a look. It was, like, a ton of fun.
I liked it as well. I think Nick did, too.
Yeah, I did.
All right, so my other pick is, in the vein of Nick's predictable week, my predictable week, X-Men Gold number 26. This is part one of the Till Death Do Us Part. The marriage of Colossus and Kitty Pryde. It flashes back to when Kitty first met Colossus, which was a fun little moment. Just a one-pager, just a little nod to show off once again that Mark Guggenheim really knows these characters and knows the history. And then jumps into, South America, when Kitty, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Rogue, and Gambit are trying to sort of run down Mesbro, who is the guy who put together the Brotherhood of the Mutants.
As an old-school villain.
And it actually reminds me of the opening of Civil War, where the Avengers sort of in civvies and, you know, looking for Crossbones. And it's sort of
Civil War, the movie.
The movie, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there a comic?
It's one of our best-selling comics of all time, yes.
there's some great teamwork stuff going on. There's some nice forward momentum on the Rachel Grey-Nightcrawler relationship, which, by the way, still seems weird to me, but I'm still getting used to it. There's also... Storm has her Thor hammer back, which I love. and then it jumps to sort of Kitty and Colossus and their incoming nuptials and all the craziness that's going around as they talk about, you know, getting married, and Colossus gets dragged to a bachelor party in Vegas with Gambit and Iceman and Nightcrawler and I forget who the other guy is. Who is it? I don't remember who it is. Anyway... a bunch of the X-Men going to a bachelor party. Kitty Pryde talks with Iceman about the team he's running. There's a evil Sentinel who's running things. Kitty has an X-Men with her mom. It is all like, if you're an X-Men fan, X-Men Gold is like hitting all the
best of histories of X history.
And I don't know. I mean, I can't speak to how accessible it is to someone who has never read X-Men. But I feel like it's still just a solid team book. It reminds me of what I liked about Claremont's back in the day.
You know, when I started reading X-Men in what would have been like the 140s or 150s of the series,
Wow, you old.
They were talking about... You're older than me, but you started reading X-Men later.
That's true.
You know, they were fighting villains that had been around before.
Yeah.
They were going to Magneto's, like, dormant volcano base and were flashing back on, you know, him having kept them captive.
Yep.
And then there was other weird stuff going on. And like, I was always getting bits and pieces of classic X-Men history. I always liked it, to be honest. And we are in a different world now where things are geared for the trade paperback and they don't like to recap you on as much stuff, which I get. But, To me, it's kind of cool to sometimes see a world that feels lived in, right? You know, and want to kind of know more about what was this storyline?
Yeah, and I think definitely X-Men Gold does that. Other stuff on my list this week, Daredevil 601, which picks up from the pretty solid Daredevil 600. Some notable status quo changes. Pretty good follow-up, some great moments. I'm really liking that run.
I was flipping through that. The art in there is
the
really
art, yeah,
good.
Yeah, the art's good. It's not... Oh, it's Mike Henderson, who I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, no,
I thought
it was really good.
Amazing Spider-Man 799 is the penultimate issue of Dan Slott's run. Some big stuff going on. Spidey calls in some of his amazing friends. That's really good. Tales of Suspense 104 wraps up the Hawkeye, Winter Soldier, Black Widow miniseries. This has been really entertaining. I'm glad they did it. I kind of want them to go forward and do more of it. It's Matthew Rosenberg, Travel Foreman, really well done. Mage number 8, which I'm still really enjoying, which I think we're like halfway through that one now. Mm-hmm. Quantum Winnie number 5, which wraps up the first story arc of that Valiant book. Lazarus Returns with issue number 27 with a 2-part story that will lead into the book becoming a quarterly, like 64-page crazy big book. And then I've already picked this book like almost every issue, I think, but the trade paperback of Ninjak is out. It is a Valiant Volume 1, so it is $10 for 5 issues. It is one of my favorite reads this year so far, and I would definitely recommend people give it a look. Dave, what else is on your stack?
I would like to mention the Future Quest Hanna-Barbera adventure comic. This issue is all Herculoids all the time. Their kid is going through some teen angst, and he's tired of living on their paradise planet and traveling around and having adventures with his dinosaur and Rockman companion and two little blob friends.
Yep.
Gleep and Gloop, or whatever they are.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it is.
And he's kind of whining and being a big baby about it. And then this is sort of one of those be careful what you wish for things, because he kind of wants sort of more control over his life and to more independence. And in the kind of Star Trek tradition, I'm going to say, a godlike alien, or seemingly a godlike alien, gives him a possible method of doing that. And it actually goes to an really interesting place. And it was a pretty cool story. And along the way, you'll get the classic Herculoid stuff, like the Big Rock Man doing cool stuff, their Space Dragon doing cool stuff. Herculoids is not something like... I didn't watch a ton of it as a kid, but I watched enough to like the characters, and they are doing stuff that's still really cool with them. I just realized, I thought it was, what's-his-name, writing Parker, but it's not. Rob Williams, I don't...
Oh, okay.
I don't
he's been around forever.
Who that is, but he's doing
forever.
A good job. There's an Aftershock comic called Her Infernal Descent, which I haven't read yet, but I was curious about because it's supposed to be sort of about a woman in the modern times who travels into hell to rescue her family or something like that, or to return them to life maybe. And it's sort of like Dante's Hell with different circles and levels, only it's kind of a modern version of that. And I remember they were mentioned, like I think authors are like leading her on, you know, in the down there. There are celebrities trapped there. It has kind of like at a glance, it looks almost like Neil Gaiman type stuff. Like it's got some of that seriousness, but also maybe some of that imaginativeness. And the art's really nice in it. So I'm looking forward to reading this, but I can't speak to its quality just yet. That's Her Infernal Descent. There's a new Star Trek Discovery miniseries. This one's much more interesting to me than what they've done before, which had kind of previously focused on the Klingons of Star Trek Discovery. And there was like a one-shot about Stamets. This one zeroes in on one of the most interesting aspects of the first season, which, spoiler warning, I'm just going to say what it is. There's stuff in the mirror universe.
Okay.
I actually didn't quite know when I was making the sign, is kind of what happens immediately after... the resolution in the TV show of the Discovery Universe stuff. You know, they sort of leave the Mirror Universe. Well, this is what happened after.
Is this written by an actual, like,
show writers or something like that?
Yeah.
I'm afraid I wouldn't know off the top of my head.
I don't know either.
Kirsten Beyer and Mike Johnson. I do not know.
I know Mike Johnson is an IDW comics writer for Star Trek stuff.
Interesting.
Let's see. And then I had two trade paperbacks I wanted to mention this week. Royal City gets its second volume.
So Kirsten Beyer, for the record, is a Star Trek Discovery episode writer. She's a staff writer. She worked on all 15 episodes.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Sorry, Royal City?
No, that's fine. I was just reading something. But that's cool. I'm glad they got somebody on the show kind of helping shepherd that so that it will feel more real. So, Royal City gets a second volume. This is the Jeff Lemire's sort of slice of life book in a following a family over a few decades in a sort of small town, and with a little touch of supernatural stuff kind of linking it together, the ghost of one of the family members who's died. And I love the series. I see that this also, like Black Hammer, got an Eisner Award, so that guy is tearing it up right now. And this is like one of the highest recommended series for me. And then finally, Runaways gets a first volume collection of like the new Runaways stories. A series. This was a series that I think all of us thought had basically died. Brian Vaughn did some great, did two great runs with it. It kind of went through various authors afterwards, none of whom seemed to be recapture the magic. And then the characters kind of got scattered around at Marvel. And I was like, well, it was fun while it lasted, but they're gone. Well, the young adult author Rainbow Rowell has brought them back together, and I would not have guessed that the writing could ever be this good again, to the point where, like, I actually some ways like her writing on the characters better than Vaughn's. I think Vaughn had a stronger sense of sort of balance between action and character, maybe. And she leans a little too hard on character, but I love all the stuff the stuff she does with the characters. and you know, the way they get back together is very sort of organic and well thought out, and like it all, everything made sense. And like every page is so there's some great conversation or interesting thing on it. So anyway, super highly recommended. I don't know if it'd be wildly approachable if you hadn't read the original stuff, because they do kind of somewhat frequently refer to it. But I feel like teenagers, like, getting in on these characters would still kind of bond with them. Yeah,
but they should read the first stuff anyway.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, and it's collected in two nice, biggie-sized volumes for all of Vaughn's stuff. I thought the first one had 1 through 18. Did the second one not go about the same length?
I don't think so. Or maybe the third one has the Whedon stuff, but I thought it was...
I think the third one has the Whedon stuff.
Okay, so at least read the first two.
Yeah, read the Brian Vaughn stuff, then just jump right to this. Yeah. You'll be perfectly set. Nick, anything else?
Yeah, I just have a few more. Infinity Countdown number 2 hits... considering the Guardians of the Galaxy, Infinity Stones.
It's kind of Marvel's big summer
yeah,
event.
Yeah, it is.
How long is it going to run?
I don't know. Probably I would like assume six issues. Like the most
one issue every 3 months, apparently.
And they had some prelude stuff that has already come out.
Yeah.
But this is heavily Guardians influenced, but there are other characters and stuff, cosmic.
Yeah,
but it is essentially the Guardians book right now too. Right?
Yeah, this one is focusing this issue especially is focusing on the Guardians, Adam Warlock, some Nova Corps members, Richard Rider. So there's some cool stuff going on.
Nova Corps is not Guardians. Adam Warlock is not Guardians.
They're Guardians adjacent. Warlock was a Guardian.
They are Guardians adjacent.
In fact, Nova was never a Guardian, but he was.
No,
an
but
ally.
He was a Star-Lord's best friend.
Yes, he was Star-Lord's best friend.
They're just buddies with him. Those characters have carried their own books and
but
stories
Warlock
before.
Warlock was a Guardian.
It's true, he was.
Was he?
Yeah, during the Atlantean.
He was. Cable 156, which is a flashback to sort of the time-hopping adventures of Young Hope and Cable. Sort of an untold tale.
Interesting.
It's really interesting. Bishop is sort of hot on their tail at this time.
Oh, right, I forgot Bishop was a bad guy for a while.
Yeah, Bishop was a bad guy, which is never my favorite thing, but I really like what... is it Kelly or Lonnie Nadler and Zach Thompson, the writers of this one, is really good. And then the art by German Perlotta, I really enjoy.
I feel like that artist did some work on Thanos and maybe even Mystique back in the day.
I could see that. I could see the Mystique thing.
It's possible.
I think that artist took over from Mike Deodato on Thanos.
Oh, okay. And then Damage number 4, which sees... The titular character go up against Poison Ivy, and also sees a shift in art. I did not remember this happening, but Carrie Nord from old Kurt Busiek Conan is coming on.
Carrie Nord's great.
Yeah, and the art in this is just gorgeous. So I thought it was really cool. Who's writing this? It's Robert Venditti. He utilizes Poison Ivy in a much more interesting way than she has been in the past.
I always like when new characters show around and kind of run up against classic Marvel or, you know, whether it's Marvel or DC, classic villains or bump into the heroes and stuff like that and kind of start to feel more part of the universe.
Yeah.
Damage, I don't know if there had been much... Had there been much DC crossover with the core universe prior to that?
He's fought the Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman.
Okay, so, yeah, that's pretty DC.
Yeah, they're definitely tying it in pretty well.
Cool.
And that is all that I have. All
right. That'll wrap up for us this week. We're going to go do our midnight release, which, again, the craziest thing was the big flamethrower fight that closed out the whole thing.
I thought that was probably bad around the paper products.
Yeah, I did too, but it worked out all right. Store's still here.
That's right. It seemed like there was always somebody between the paper products and the fire.
Well, that was when Asbestos Man showed up. Little known superhero, Asbestos Man.
Little known until now. Now he's probably famous. People probably already know about him the next day.
He saved Rogue's Gallery from the flamethrower fight.
Yep. Always remember Asbestos Man, people.
Yes, remember Asbestos Man. And until next time.
Yo, Joe.
Remember Asbestos Man.
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.